This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the audio podcast where we talk about our favorite books in science fiction and fantasy, talk to some wonderful authors, and hear what all you guys are discussing about over in Goodreads.
We have a wonderful author today. We're going to interview Andrew Main, who's written a couple of books in his Chronological Man series, as well as some thrillers and other stuff. And he's got some good stories coming out, too. We'll talk to him about all that.
Absolutely. But let's kick off the rest of the show first by talking about what we are drinking.
You're drinking water?
What I'm drinking water.
Hard weekend, huh?
I actually did have a hard weekend. I'm not going to lie to you. I rocked out to some karaoke and I just did not feel very well. So I'm deciding to go the water route this week.
There is no shame in that. Water, all our listeners should know, is a perfectly acceptable drink for what you're drinking. It's very healthy.
Absolutely. And so what are you drinking tonight?
I am not drinking water. I am having a 2008 Red Diamond Winery Shiraz from the Mountain State of Washington.
That sounds delightful.
Actually, it's not bad. I'd say it's like a solid 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Okay.
I know that 5 out of 10 sounds horrible, but it shouldn't be. 5 out of 10 should be like it's perfectly fine.
I'm trying to see what its rating is, what its ranking is on
maybe
Seller
7
Tracker,
out of 10.
But I can't really
see. Everyone thinks 7 is average, so I'll give it a 7.
All right.
But yeah, no, it tastes fine.
Sounds fair. Shiraz is one of my favorite varieties of wine. So
and it was like $7 at Trader Joe's. How can you go wrong?
That was always very good as well. All right, well, let's head into the quick burns.
New Terry Pratchett novel!
Oh, yeah. And it's not Discworld.
No, it's called Dodger. It's not a Discworld novel. It's in the same universe as Nation. Will be published in September. September 25th, I believe, is the tentative U.S. date. Mm-hmm. Don't really know anything else about it.
I haven't read Nation yet.
It's called Dodger.
I haven't read Nation. I hope to at some point. I don't know when in my quagmire of to read list I'm going to get to that. But I do very much enjoy Terry Pratchett. And the next Discworld novel will be the Raising Taxes, which is the conclusion to the Moise von Lipwig trilogy.
At least that's what he thinks. Yeah. So hopefully that'll end up being true.
I haven't read that part of Discworld yet, so I'll have to get to that as well sometime. Blarg.
You thought the Wheel of Time was long. Brandon Sanderson planning a 36-volume series.
Okay. Well, yes, you can put it that way, but it's more 36 books in the world that he has already started to create.
Yeah, this is Adam Wirt on the Wirt Zone saying he was going through some old interviews and was surprised to read that Brandon Sanderson is planning pretty much all of his novels to end up being part of this mega series.
I just like the idea that he already has in his mind, after having written in the Cosmere setting, Elantris, Mistborn, The Final Empire, Mistborn, The Well of Ascension, Mistborn, The Hero of Ages, Warbreaker, The Stormlight Archive, The Way of Kings, and Mistborn, The Alloy of Law. Now he's like, after that, I'm going to have another 28 novels, coming out at some point. Like, how do you even know you're going to write that many? How do you have it that planned out?
He's got the story in his head. He's got the world in his head. And you know what? I like that when you can tell, for instance, Frank Herbert, you can tell, knew those first three novels of Dune and most of the last three from the beginning. You get it, there's just a sense that like he's not making this up as he goes along. He saw this. He had a vision from beginning to end, and now he's working his way through it. And you could tell the last three Dune novels were not as solid in his head because mm-hmm. they start to kind of meander a little bit. But I like this idea that, hey, you know what? There's going to be an Elantris 2 and there's going to be a Warbreaker 2. And you know what? They're all part of this universe that I have planned out. It's like, I want to live in your world. I want to take a tour. I want to be a tourist in that land.
I think we need to have him back on the show again sometime and explain this craziness.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Awesome craziness that he has in his brain.
And speaking of the Wheel of Time, which Brandon Sanderson finished up for Robert Jordan a while back, WordZone also points out Michael Whalen has been announced to produce the cover art for the ebook edition of the final Wheel of Time novel, A Memory of Light.
Yes, it was sadly announced that Daryl K. Sweet, who had done the other 13 print editions of the novels, passed away before he finished the last one. It's kind of a strange coincidence.
Yeah, isn't
if you think
it?
Think about it. It's kind of a very sad, very strange coincidence that both Robert Jordan and Daryl K. Sweet, you know, who obviously had a lot of, you know, were very, had written and worked and done great stuff with the Wheel of Time series, you know, both passed away before they saw it to its completion.
Rudy Rucker is launching his own press, not a book, a press called Transreal Press. And the first publication is a massive single volume collection of Rudy Rucker's complete short stories and a reissue of The Hollow Earth, which has been out of print forever. And if you're into steampunk, you know, like that is like bedrock steampunk classic. A ton of other upcoming titles are also listed. You can check them out at Transreal Press, the complete stories announcement on Rudy Rucker's blog, rudyrucker.com.
Also interesting in the news, there are two science publishers who are going into the world of science fiction. This is very cool. Two new science fiction magazines have been announced, and they're both being published by science publications. New Scientist magazine is going to be creating a new publication called ARC, and the MIT Technology Review has announced TRSF. I'm not sure how they want you to say that.
TRSF.
It's dubbed as the first installment of a to-be annual hard sci-fi collection. Some authors who will be involved are Joe Haldeman and Cory Doctorow, and also interesting that they noted in the Slashdot article, both publications will be printed on paper for the first issue only, and all forthcoming ones will be ebooks.
Ooh, so collector's edition, got to grab that first one.
Get them while you can.
I love science and science fiction closely collaborating like this.
Tom,
I think this is a fantastic trend.
We live in the future.
Every second.
Science fiction and science fact are melding.
They're merging.
They're merging and melding before our very eyes.
However, that doesn't mean science fiction writers always love technology. They're a little irked with Amazon.com over redirect links to other booksellers. Jeff Bezos is getting a lot of heat from the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. They have announced on their website that they're redirecting all of their links to IndieBound.org, Powell's Books in Portland, or Barnes & Noble, after Amazon pulled more than 4,000 ebooks from its website following a price dispute with the independent publishing group.
Ouch. That is not good. Well, it's not good for it's tough for the indie writers because, you know, Amazon is a huge platform and a great way for people to discover their work. But it's also bad for Amazon because it makes them look like giant assholes. Which maybe they don't care about, but it does make them look that way.
You know, Amazon is no stranger to this sort of controversy. They've come under fire from indie booksellers and indie publishers since the 90s. I remember indie publishers like trying to stomp out Amazon in the 90s because Amazon has a long tradition of undercutting prices and really putting price pressure on things.
Well, they're the Walmart of books, essentially.
They really are. And now they have even more power in ebooks, with the Kindle, with the Amazon imprint, where they're actually signing authors and publishing them. That's causing a lot of problems with Barnes & Noble. So something to keep an eye on. I mean, I guess in a cynical way, as a consumer, you can say, hey, this is great for me because it means cheaper books, you know, no matter where I look, because everybody's going to be competing. But I don't like the idea that we can't all get along and compete on the same platform, that we have to redirect links. I'm not saying I'm criticizing the Science Fiction Writers of America for doing this. I kind of think they have to, because they're getting a raw deal from Amazon. But it's sad that it's been brought to that light.
Yeah, Frank Catalano, a GeekWire columnist and former officer for the SFWA, says the move is creating some controversy among members. Quote, for an association of science fiction and fantasy writers who themselves write about technology's impact on the future, to take this action against a seller of ebooks and ebook technology is a pretty strong statement, Catalano tells us. Its impact likely is limited, though, because it's only SFWA's own web links that are being redirected. It hasn't, in its post, asked members to do the same thing on their own websites.
Yeah, and they have the right to do it on their own website. I respect that. And you know, I'm not going to boycott Amazon or anything. I don't feel that strongly about it, but I understand why they feel that way, and I can respect that. It's going to take a while for this sort of stuff to shake out, and you don't want any one player to get too powerful and start dictating terms.
All right, well, let's move on to the calendar. Most of these books will, of course, also be available on Amazon when they come out. March 6th, we have Crucible of Gold by Naomi Novik. We also have A Rising Thunder by David Weber and Intruder, Foreigner, number 13, by C.J. Shera.
Looking a little further down the line to March 13th, that's next week, we have A Crown Imperiled, book two of the Chaos War Saga by Raymond E. Feist, the fifth and final Rift War book, full explosive swing, they say. It's a monumental saga of courage, conflict, and bitter consequence. So if you like that sort of thing, check it out.
Yes, and we also have Shoebox Trainwreck by John Mantooth and Danny Evarts. These 13 genre-bending stories are set against a backdrop of sudden violence and profound regret, populated by characters whose circumstances and longings drive them to the point of no return, and sometimes even further.
Ooh.
Yeah, that sounds really pretty good. I'm into the idea of short stories lately. I think ever since I read Machine of Death, I've been wanting to read more short story compilations.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it's a nice change of pace sometimes to have that kind of thing.
And then a little further down the road, March 27th, Fair Coin by E.C. Myers. 16-year-old Ephraim Scott is horrified when he comes home from school and finds his mother unconscious at the kitchen table clutching a bottle of pills. Ooh. The reason for her suicide attempt is even more disturbing. She thought she'd identified Ephraim's body at the hospital that day. Among his dead double's belongings, Ephraim finds a strange coin that grants wishes when he flips it.
And I apologize in advance, or I post-apologize for mispronouncing C.J. Sherry's name, because apparently it's pronounced Sherry.
And there's also 15 stories, not 13.
Okay. Oh, 15. Well, now we see no one had to write in and correct us, because we already corrected ourselves.
Ha! We're getting good at this.
Nice. All right. Well, we want to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. So what are we going to recommend this week?
Well, you know what? We are obviously reading The Lies of Locke Lamora on audiobook. I'm listening to it on audiobook. I love it on audiobook. I know you're not. You're doing the ebook version.
Mm-hmm.
I almost regret that you're doing it. Like when it started, I was like, okay, that's a good idea. Like one of us do one format and the other. This is really well read. So I'm going to recommend that again, but to give you a new recommendation, new to Audible is The Stand by Stephen King. It's, you know,
not Stephen King.
Sci-fi, but I know I spent like in the entire year of 2011 reading the novels in Stephen King's Dark Tower series. And The Stand is not in the series, but it's in the universe. It is the one that I had to read in print. Or actually, I read it in ebook because it wasn't available as an audiobook at the time. But now it is. So
okay. Throw
that in there as well. It's narrated by Grover Gardner.
I've talked about this before as well, but I just started listening yesterday to The Coldest War by Ian Tregillis.
It's amazing.
So I'm on that now. So that's why I would love to actually maybe even stop reading Coldest War and go to and listen to Lies of Locke Lamora in audiobook form. But I'm loving Coldest War so much,
it's
I don't
really
want
good.
To. So yeah. I'm torn. I'm still having that falling asleep instantly problem at night. Mm-hmm. And now I have to play Mass Effect. So
you have to.
I have to play Mass Effect. It's my job. It's my job to play video games now. It's my job now
to really
play.
It really is.
Can we just talk about how awesome my job is?
To play video games and read sci-fi books. Oh, no, I have
That's
so
my
much
job.
Work.
That's my job. And I don't have enough time to do my job.
Everyone hates you now.
Because of all my other jobs. That are also fun and cool. I suck. I'm sorry. So I hate myself right now.
There's no excuse not to get a free audiobook by going to audiblepodcast.com/sword and trying it out. And if you already are an Audible subscriber, we thank you. Let Audible know that you support us. And also pass that URL around, audiblepodcast.com/sword, because anybody can use it to get a free audiobook and try it out.
Please help to continue to support my lifestyle of playing video games and reading science fiction and fantasy books.
That might be undercutting. Never.
Oh, crap. All right. Well, let's take a quick moment to cut over to our interview with Andrew Main.
Initiate timeline sequence.
And so here he is, joining us, Andrew Main, author of The Chronological Man Adventures. Welcome, Andrew.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Of course, you're also a host of the Weird Things podcast with Justin Robert Young, but we won't hold that against you.
I appreciate that. I've had to overcome a lot.
And it was also Justin's birthday today, so we all called him and harassed him for a little while. So that was nice. It was a team effort.
But this isn't about Justin Robert Young. This is about Andrew Main. What is the most recent Chronological Man? Is that The Monster in the Mist?
No, the newest one is The Martian Emperor.
Okay.
This came out about a month ago, 2 months ago.
So that's wow, that's fresh. And Kindle format, Nook format, 99 cents, bargain.
Kindle, Nook, all that. We're going to be coming out with an audiobook narrated by Mr. Justin Robert Young probably within another 2 months. So
that's great. So for people who haven't read the books or aren't familiar with the series, tell us a little bit about it.
Hypothetically. Well, the premise is this, is that I always loved, growing up, I loved Sherlock Holmes. I loved Doctor Who. I kind of liked sort of steampunk adventures. And I wanted to tell stories that were kind of a hard science fiction in the sense that, you know, it wasn't time travel where somebody would go backwards in time, but I love the idea of somebody who would kind of show up in different periods of time and have interesting adventures. And so that's what The Chronological Man's based on, is this character who's a lot older than you might think when you meet him, and he shows up at different points in time and for reasons that you start to find out as you read the books, and he tries to set about trying to make the things work right in the world, but he's sort of kind of got his own ideology he's trying to reconcile with things.
Yeah, you describe him as a mixture of Tony Stark, Sherlock Holmes, and Doctor Who. So the Doctor Who part is immediately apparent because he's like, you know, unknowingly old and can move through time. The Sherlock Holmes, I get that pretty easily. Like, okay, he's a detective, right? He's an observer. He's smart. What's the Tony Stark part?
He's an inventor. And so It's interesting when you read stuff about the 19th century and you try to pinpoint when something was invented. Let's say the light bulb. You know, Thomas Edison. We recognize him as the kind of the father of invention, the guy who invented the light bulb. But we know that there are other people who've developed things that were similar. Even Eugène Robert Houdin, who was a famous French magician, had an estate that was lit up by light bulbs, you know, 50 years before Edison, you know, ever publicized what he had done. And you find that with a lot of inventions where there were predecessors to it. Maybe not the complete forms. Maybe it's not something that could be brought to market. But before Marconi, you had radio. And so I loved the idea of a character who was kind of this tinkerer inventor who was coming up with things sort of before that we knew they existed. But everything he comes up with actually was something that I can point to in the research and say, yeah, no, this was at this point in time, but we think about it coming out later on. And his method by which he's able to basically, you know, he kind of has this method of hibernation and kind of move forward for time is actually based upon some kind of theories that they had, you know, back in the days of Lavoisier and Benjamin Franklin. And so it's sort of taking that kind of the Victorian look of science from that point of view and the Victorian gentleman adventurer and inventor in creating a character around him that sort of has to follow the laws of our universe.
Well, is it kind of cheating if he can move through time to be an inventor? Does it work that way? Like, he can't go back?
He doesn't go back.
He doesn't go back.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I would want to do. I would want to be an inventor that freaking, you know, starts out in the future and then goes way back. It's like, hey, I got this great idea for a bulb of sorts.
Oh totally. I'd show up in like 1963 and I'd be like, I have Led Zeppelin 2. Here's the album. I made it myself.
But you know what happened? Everyone would be like, burn the witch. Burn her. Like,
where's Led Zeppelin 1?
I'm like, especially in 1963. You know. They'd be like, burn
the witch. A lot of the horrible witch burnings of 1963 were just really a very sad time in our history.
Witch was a name of a form of marijuana you could get out of California. So yes, you are
burning
correct.
Witch.
And people would burn it for medical purposes.
And they'd get high on magic.
Exactly.
Anyway, I digress. So you've done a lot with, you know, posting your books on Kindle for 99 cents, you know, and Nook as well, and doing audiobooks. What is your main outreach method? Like what are you hoping to do by almost giving your content away?
The goal is to find people who like the same sort of stories that I do. It's to build an audience. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we all have our reasons for why we write or why we create. And, you know, I come from sort of a different background, you know, as a magician and performing live and then moving into a totally different medium. The thing that I realize that I appreciate the most is having people who like what you do and making it as accessible as I can, getting to as many people as I possibly can is the goal. So that's why we do the 99 cent ebooks. We'll put out a free version as a podcast that'll be serialized that people can download and listen to, or they can, you know, they'll be able to buy an audiobook for dirt cheap. So that's basically it.
Now, when you serialize the podcast, are you just putting that out yourself, or are you going through Podio Books or another service like that?
We're doing it ourselves. So Justin will go and, you know, when he records the audiobook, he'll then break it down into a bunch of podcast segments that then we put up there. And, you know, we have pretty good distribution so far, but, you know, I'm always looking for, you know, ways to get to more people.
You did that with The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist.
Yeah, we did that. And that's been really big. We did that with Public Enemy Zero, which was the thriller I wrote. That was the biggest book so far. And that was, you know, was up there in some of the top iTunes list for quite a while. And the first book, which was The Grendel's Shadow, my first kind of a space operatic sci-fi, you know, man on a mission hunter sort of story.
I have to say, I love the artwork, the artwork on some of your books. Who does it?
I do that.
You do it.
No yes. kidding. It's really good.
That's great.
I'm gonna hire you.
Yeah, well, I work cheap. I used to, you know, my background was as a magician, and then I got into putting out books and DVDs for magicians on the art of magic. And I'm one of these people that I get to be very meticulous about, oh, I want it to look like this, or it should look like that. And I always am impatient and don't have time to wait for anybody. So I just started learning how to do Photoshop and how to do compositions and kind of self-taught. And somebody who's actually more experienced in art and stuff would look at that and go, yes, clearly self-taught. But it's a lot of fun.
It's impressive to me because I know nothing.
I'm terrible with that kind of thing. I was really proud that I put our logo on a bookmark. I was like, I put a logo on the bookmark and I got it printed and it doesn't look like crap. So that was good.
Well, it just comes down to having to do it. I'm not a person that, you know, anybody ever looked at something I drew when I was younger and said that I had any artistic talent at all. Mm-hmm. And I just looking at what I liked, looking at what worked, and just over time trying to say, okay, for this, I want it to look like a movie poster, and it's got to have, and then you learn the basics, you know, how to frame things and then how to do compositions and then how to do Photoshops, because, you know, there's a nice lucrative, you know, business in, you know, making exploitive photographs of your friends. So all these things work together.
You know, it's interesting when I'm looking at the artwork for both Martian Emperor and Monster in the Mist, you depict him from the back. He's got a suit on. He's got a bowler hat? It looks like a bowler hat.
Yeah, bowler hat, yeah.
And the umbrella. So he's very gentlemanly. It looks very noir. It's not Art Deco, but it's definitely got a little bit of a tease towards that feel. And yet it's 1890s era, and you're talking about inventions, et cetera. Do you consider it steampunk, or is it more noir, or is it a combo?
If you like steampunk, absolutely. If you're afraid of nerds wearing goggles riding in airships, then no, it's not steampunk. You know, the style was, I would go back and look at photographs that were taken, you know, from that period and from, you know, after post Civil War, really starting in the 1880s and 1890s, we became a very forward looking culture, particularly in the United States. And futurism is something that started prior to the 20th century. And so you start looking at some of the fashions and, you know, how people dressed and how they attired themselves. And you start to see things that sort of, you know, one thing might look in place in 1890. It might look in place in, you know, 1940. The size of lapels may change, the way the hats are broken. And, you know, I found a funny thing playing around with a fedora, just a regular kind of a classic fedora hat, which, you know, a noir detective might work. If you pop out the center and you straighten the rim, it looks like a bowler, mm-hmm. which, you know, to anybody who knows about hats would say, well, yeah, that's actually where it came from. I didn't. And then, you know, you just realize how these little subtle changes creep into things over time.
So who are you reading these days too?
When I have time to read, you know, one of my favorites is Peter F. Hamilton and his series he did, The Pandora Star. George R. R. Martin, of course. He's fantastic.
Of course.
Yeah.
Unless you're hungry.
Yeah. I just finished reading Hunger Games, speaking of which. I really enjoyed that.
What did you think about that? Because I've had some debates with folks who have read it, who say they felt it was just way too teen romance. And we read it as a sword and laser pick, and we enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I enjoyed it. I think that it's important whenever you read something to understand who the audience is for. I mean, I'll defend the Twilight movies. You know, you see different cultures and different groups of people have their own ways of expressing things. If we went over to Japan and we watched some kabuki theater, we could laugh at it and say, oh, look at the makeup. Look at how they express themselves. It's so overdramatic. You know, when you read a teen romance novel, you have to remember, what was it like when you're 14 years old? Everything was much more extreme. Everything was much more heightened. You know, the breaking up with somebody was the worst thing in the world. You know, a friend of yours being mean to you couldn't imagine a worse tragedy. And so I think books that reflect that, I think they're very honest. As adults, we tend to be jaded and we sort of are muted in our way of looking at things. But if we remember what it's like, it makes a lot more sense.
Oh, that's so absolutely true. I mean, things are felt so much more acutely at that age. Like you feel, like you said, that it's the end of the world when someone says something bitchy to you.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you know, I'm kind of glad I don't feel that way anymore. I've become a little more numb over the years.
Glad you're mature. I just actually finished writing my first teen adventure novel for my agents. And, you know, that was getting into the writing from a young teenage girl character, you know, point of view. And that's the thing I had to remember, is what was it like when you're that age?
What was it like when you were a young teenage girl?
Well, you know, I still couldn't get anybody to pay attention to me. That's why I had to learn magic tricks and give that up.
I know a lot of magicians these days, I'm coming to realize.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, it's an occupational hazard of working with Brian Brushwood. You just got
That. I've known Brian for, I think, since the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we go back through the skeptics community in that world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time we shoot Game On together over at Twit every weekend now, and which is our new video game show, and he just busts out a magic trick out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh my god, I forgot you're a magician. it's a revelation.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you.
Andrew, I know.
Yay, me.
You mentioned an agent, and I think a lot of people look at your stuff. They see it's Kindle, it's Nook. They would assume you're self-published. Are you self-publishing these? Do you work with an agent? How's that work?
Well, yeah. Well, here's what happened was after the second book came out, it was the Public Enemy Zero, and it was a thriller, so it wasn't set in the future or the past. It didn't have any giant killer robots. It did really well, and I started getting requests for film rights, and I started getting approached by different agents. And, you know, my goal all along was to I just wanted to kind of control my own career. And having gone from point of view, I've been involved in television, you know, I've worked for, you know, I've produced stuff like, you know, like G4 and Cartoon Network and stuff like that. And having gone from, you know, one world where you have to deal with a bunch of other people saying yes or no and wait for that, I love the idea of, you know, electronic publishing and not having to deal with that at all. And it's just you and your audience. But, you know, when the opportunity came up, to work with an agent that basically said I could continue doing my novellas, and then if I wanted to take stuff to a big publisher, they could do that, but it wouldn't have to stop me from the momentum I had. You know, that seemed very appealing. So I said yes to that, and that was great because it made it easier when it came time to negotiate things like film rights, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So how did you originally get started, though?
Writing?
Yeah.
You know, here's the funny story is I've always wanted to write. I've always tried writing fiction, and I wrote a lot of really bad stuff, really, really bad stuff. And I'm a very analytical person, but I was just incapable of realizing what I was doing wrong. And so I kind of just put it back for a while, didn't do it for the longest time. And this kind of resurgence came about a year ago this month, I was actually sitting at the airport waiting to leave South by Southwest, and I had my iPad in front of me, and I said, you know, maybe I should try writing again. Now that I know a little bit more about, I think, you know, story structure and, you know, showing people as opposed to telling, I sat down and I just started writing out the chapter to the first book, which was The Grendel's Shadow. And, you know, I finished it, you know, I got home, I think I finished it like 4 days later, looked at it and said, you know, it's not
four
bad.
4 days?
I'm a shut-in.
That makes me feel like all our NaNoWriMo just was for nothing.
I'm going to write a book in a month. 4 days.
Yeah, it was a novella. It was a novella. So it was like 35,000 words. So.
Yeah, the NaNoWriMo's 50,000. So.
And that took us a month. So.
Yeah.
Well, you're
just saying you're really fast.
Yeah, but again, I've structured my life to sort of give me a lot of freedom to do around and do stupid stuff. I have a half-finished Yeti downstairs, okay, that I started building on my birthday once. I mean, that's.
And you have time to build a Yeti?
Yeah, of course.
You're a renaissance man, Andrew Bain.
I tell you, I wish other people understood that. You know, when the girls go run screaming from my house, I'll try and tell them that. So, you know, I finished the book and I said, okay, I'm never going to write a great novel. Never going to write something that's going to be like, oh my God, you know, Margaret Mitchell, forget it. This guy's done it. And so I said, you know, can I write something that's good and that people will like? So, you know, I gave it to Justin to read and Justin didn't throw up. And I showed it to a couple other friends like, no, this is really cool. We like this. And so I said, all right, let me go put this up there as an ebook. And then already having an audience from people who listen to the podcast on weirdthings.com, it was very helpful. So I knew the first people to see this were going to be people who were weird like me. And it did really well. The reaction was great. And then I said, well, let me go write a novel. So I wrote Public Enemy Zero in, that was April, and then put that out, I think, like May 1st. I'm just looking at my calendar here. And that, you know, that got received really well, and that got me a lot of, you know, opportunities I hadn't even thought about. And so just sort of kept right along.
That's awesome. So what are you working on now? I know you have another book coming up, but is there anything else you have in the can?
Well, right now, I've got, you know, there's the, you know, of course, the typical, you know, the writer story is, oh, the thing that my agents want or whatever kind of thing, which we'll see. It involves unicorns and I really like it.
And
from a, I kind of like, I sat down and said, you know, if James Cameron wanted to tell a unicorn story, what would it be like? And so it's kind of from that point of view. I've got a crime thriller, which is going to probably come out in a couple weeks. I'm just waiting to get that edited back because I am horrific when it comes to actually writing and spelling and making coherent sentences. So that's going to be probably ready to release in a couple weeks. And I'm putting up the finishing touches right now on a kind of a murder mystery. And I wanted to start writing in different genres. That's part of the goal is every time I sit down to write is I try to write something a little bit different that I'm unfamiliar with. And then I'll sit down and I'll read a book on writing and understand like, oh, that's what I did wrong. So the crime thriller, which is going to come out soon, it features a female detective who works for the FBI who's got a background in magic, which it's, you know, kind of funny because like my brother works for the FBI. My father is a federal agent and then I'm in magic. I'm not a female. Much to my mother's disappointment. But, it's kind of told from that point of view, which I always thought would be kind of interesting to do. And so I'm excited about that because that's kind of like my first just sort of straight up kind of crime thriller without, you know, zombies or super plagues. Mm-hmm. And then the mystery series is based upon, it's a Hollywood detective series. I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. I just love California. And I love all the little things going up there in the hills and going on the set where, you know, they made Planet of the Apes. You know, going to the different locations. And so I thought, let me write a book that's kind of based around that idea. And so that'll be coming out.
Awesome. And so where can people find your work online?
The easiest place is if you go to andrewmainbooks.com. That's M-A-Y-N-E, like Bruce Wayne, but with an M. So it's andrewmain.com or andrewmainbooks.com.
Awesome. And can people find your audiobooks there as well?
Yeah, they'll find all the audiobooks there at the bargain prices of 99 cents, I think, for just about everything. And links to go to find the books on Amazon and Nook and iBooks.
And if people really enjoy them, is there a place where they can give you even more money than 99 cents if they wanted to, like a donation bin or something?
No, I think donation bins are silly.
So I guess I should take down our donation bin.
No,
I'm
no,
just kidding. You guys, we don't actually have a donation bin.
Yeah, I mean, all they do is depress you.
But Andrew's home address, if you want to send him a check.
Yeah, certainly. I just buy the if you people again, if people like the book, the best thing you can do when you like something is to share it with other people. We live, and particularly like in Amazon. You know, Amazon is its own ecosystem. It's not driven by Google. It's not driven by that. It's driven by what people like and what they love. And you'll notice, ever notice how books you absolutely love, you go look, and sometimes they don't have like they're not all 5 stars. Sometimes they're 3.5 stars or 4 stars. Mm-hmm. And that's often because, you know, people are coming in from the outside who maybe don't understand it. And, you know, and that's fine. But the thing is you want to encourage people who love your stuff to get out there and tell everybody else, I love this, and explain why. Tell people why they like this. Because that's when I go look at reviews, that's the thing I want to see is somebody tell me why I would like this, not just say, oh, it's great. Because there are a lot of great books there that are just going to go right over my head.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time. And I'm stoked to read the books.
Yeah, or you could have Justin Robert Young's dulcet tones, you know, narrate the book to you. His female voices are actually pretty good.
You know, people who don't know him.
Female voices too.
Oh yeah,
that's rad.
People who don't know him personally probably would really enjoy it.
All right, thank you so much, Andrew.
Hey, thank you guys.
All right, well, that was great. That was a lot of fun.
I see. I told you he was a good guy.
And I was so concerned about it.
No, you weren't. No, Andrew's awesome. I know him through the Weird Things podcast and Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood and all those guys. And I have heard him talking about his books. This is the most I've been able to actually chat with him about it at any one stretch. I had no idea how many stories this guy has in his head.
I know.
I can't wait to see what he comes out with next.
This is why I'm afraid I will never be a true writer, because I just don't think I have that many stories in my head.
See, I come up with story ideas all the time. I don't know if they're any good, but then I never have time to actually write them.
All those video games and sci-fi fantasy books really causes problems in your life. All right, well, let's move on to Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. So this was a great thread started by Christine. She says, so I resisted getting a Kindle when my husband suggested getting one for my birthday. I finally gave in. I love books and I really do miss them, but I'm so lazy now that I don't go to the bookstore anymore. I just buy a new one at home in my bed. So sad. I know, it's a hard life. But she now has this problem that her book collection is growing on her Kindle and she's discovering new authors that she loves. But what happens when she goes to a book signing? How does she get her Kindle signed? Does she get her Kindle signed? Does she get a hardcover version? What does she do? So that's the question she's posing.
Now, Stan points out there are apps like Kindle Graph attempting to address the issue. It lets authors send personalized inscriptions and signatures. Mm-hmm. Other people threw out their various ideas in this thread. My thought is, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but my thought is if you really want the signature, you buy the hardback.
That's also my suggestion. I mean, I collect hardcover for like first editions, and that's what I like to get signed. So that's a good suggestion. I mean, it does cost the extra money usually.
Yeah, sometimes the book signings include the book, and sometimes they don't. So when they don't include the book, and they charge you for the autograph, then I guess you could just have them sign your Kindle. I don't know.
That's what Tassie Dave says. Just get your Kindle signed, or you could get a cover and sign the inside of the cover where it's kind of soft and felty.
Right. I think that's another option.
I was asked, occasionally someone will ask me to sign like their iPhone or their MacBook.
Or iPad or their laptop. Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. And I did it once at Nerdtacular and I tried to draw a sword and I definitely drew a penis on that man's MacBook Pro.
You know, that's the problem with drawn swords.
Definitely accidentally.
Laser's much easier, I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Just draw an L on its side. Nobody misinterprets that.
So I apologize to that guy. So maybe just get the hardcover version or get an autograph book. Some people actually have,
that's
you know,
true.
Autograph
you can do
books.
That. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. The return of the autograph book. Then you're buying a book.
Yeah.
It's an autograph book. Thomunist also started a thread called Female Sci-Fi Leads. He says, forgive me if this has been covered before, but I haven't seen it. I remember reading A Wrinkle in Time as a kid, and I'm currently reading Ira Affair, but that got me thinking that I haven't read much else in science fiction with a female lead. Mm. I can think of plenty of novels where the male lead has a female sidekick, but I was wondering if anyone has any recommendations for novels with a female lead character that you enjoyed.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of great suggestions in here already. Nick said the painfully obvious one is The Hunger Games and also The Golden Compass and Contact. And those are great also. Jess says Expendable and Ascending by James Allen Gardner are both terrific. And Shards of Honor is another great one. And several of the Ian Banks culture novels have female leads.
Do you count Elantris? Because
I wouldn't
there's
put that
multiple
as
leads.
I wouldn't put that as sci-fi.
Oh, he wants sci-fi particularly. But in fantasy, would you consider that because it's multiple leads?
Yeah, I would say so. I think when people are looking for female leads, they're really looking for a female narrative. You know, like a female narrator throughout the whole thing, I would imagine.
Well,
but maybe not. That could work.
I am reading Blue Remembered Earth by Alistair Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And there are multiple leads. And it's third person, right? So, there's no first person perspective. Mm-hmm. It starts with a male lead. But now that I'm like about halfway through, it's shifted to essentially being the story of Sunday. And it's now a female lead. So it's sort of shared throughout the book rather than being a female lead the way like Locke Lamora is a male lead.
Mm-hmm. So this thread then kind of turns into an interesting discussion between a few different people like Paul and Terp Kristen and Jess actually come back, and they're kind of discussing like why female leads are difficult and why as writers, they have a hard time making a female lead, especially from a male perspective. So it's an interesting thread. It goes beyond the suggestions that we discussed earlier too.
Sure.
So check it out.
Well, and it's difficult when you're a male trying to write anything that's not you. I mean, I shouldn't say when you're a male. It's difficult to write anything that isn't you. So if you're a female writer, you're much more likely to have an easier time writing a female lead because you are a female. There are fewer female writers in science fiction and fantasy. Mm-hmm. So there's a larger question to be debated here, but go check it out. It's good discussion.
So we have some awesome stuff in the TV, video games, and movies category. First of all, the latest Game of Thrones Season 2 trailer is out. We are getting very close to the premiere of Season 2, April
1st.
Have
you watched both these trailers?
I haven't watched this new one, and I'm actually watching it with the audio off right now.
Okay, what's funny about the new one, the second one has modern music in the background, first of all, which is kind of not offsetting, but it's like, oh, okay, weird. Okay. This is like a music video. Second, it looks at the beginning like it's the same scenes from the first trailer.
Mm-hmm. No.
But then it starts trailing, and then it starts moving off into other things. You're like, oh, I'm getting to look at that. Oh, I'm getting to see that. Oh, this is about war. Mm-hmm. And they've changed it from Winter is Coming to War is Coming in the subtitle. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes, I did. And I'm seeing dragons, and I'm seeing the Red Comet. So there's some pretty good stuff in here. It's going to be a great season. I wore my Hodor shirt today, by
Hodor.
The way. Hodor. I wore my Hodor shirt today, and people were like, what's that mean? And I was like, Hodor.
Also, The Legend of Korra has a trailer out. If you're a fan of Avatar The Last Airbender, that's the next series in the series. They've dropped the Avatar from this probably because of the confusion with the James Cameron Avatar,
It's
got a steampunky Victorian tech angle, according to Wartzone. So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm very excited about that. I loved The Last Airbender, the original series, not the M. Night Shyamalan version of it, of which I tried to watch the film recently on Netflix streaming and had to stop at 20 minutes in because it was that bad. It was that bad. And I was like, oh, I knew this is why I didn't watch it. I listened to everyone's warnings and I was finally like, you know, I've got nothing else to do. I'll check it out. Nope, that was a bad idea.
You didn't think it was pretty?
No, because I was not watching it in 3D. I don't know if that made it worse.
No, I've watched it in high def and I still think it's pretty, even if it's not 3D.
Okay, I guess. Maybe it gets prettier later.
I like to have that movie on in the background, like on a weekend when I'm doing other stuff. Because it doesn't task your brain.
Well, this is something that you watch regularly?
It's something that has been on the movie channels on cable regularly. Okay. And so I'll look for something like, oh, I'm going to be cleaning my room or doing the laundry or something. And I'm like, I just want to pop something on. What's there? And I'll look for things like Star Trek movies or The Matrix or something like that. And the Avatar has been on quite a bit. And I'm like, yeah, that's mindless. That's something pretty to look at when I'm walking past the television. And I'm not going to have to think about the plot at all.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to try not to judge you. So it's cool.
I appreciate
that.
That's
cool. But
that's nice of you.
Also fantastic, the new Battlestar Galactica pilot is completed. This is for the new spinoff show Blood and Chrome, and it's going to come out on Sci-Fi. They're going to be talking soon about when the pilot's going to come out and start showing. And it has to do with the young pilot, William Husker Adama. Little young Adama, as he's first assigned as a Raptor
Not
pilot
as little
aboard
as
the
Caprica.
Galactica.
No. He's medium Adama, actually.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, he's not tiny Adama.
Right.
He's young pilot Adama, so he's probably in his, I would guess, his, you know.
He's probably fetching Adama.
In his early 20s, perhaps. Yeah. So that's, I hope it's better than Caprica.
I liked Caprica.
I didn't like Caprica.
Did you hate Caprica? Well,
I hated that girl
I'll
drove me
nuts. I'll try not to judge you.
Drove me nuts.
You just.
Oh, she was so obnoxious. Anyway.
Well, yeah, of course she was, but that was the point.
I guess.
Anyway, Blood and Chrome, set in the 10th year of the first Cylon War. They're going to have to do a little revisionist history because in the Razor episode movie of the original Battlestar, William Adama said he was assigned to be a pilot on the last day of the war. Obviously, that's not going to work to do a whole series set in the 10th year of the war. But 44 years before the Battlestar Galactica reboot began, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited.
That is pretty great. Yeah, I'm excited for that one, too. All right, well, let's do a quick check-in with the book that we are reading. And currently, we're on The Lies of Locke Lamora, Gentleman Bastard, number 1, by Scott Lynch. And I'm really enjoying it. I really like this book a lot so far.
I am surprised how much I'm loving this book. I wasn't dreading it or anything, but it certainly isn't the kind of book that I would have read the summary of and said, oh, yeah, I want to read that. Not Patrick Rothfuss, Name of the Wind. I read that. I'm like, oh, that sounds good, right? Mm-hmm. This is one where I'm like, oh, it looks like fine book, but maybe not my thing. Absolutely drawn in. I love Locke Lamora. I love the world. I love the way they go back and forth between the time periods.
The non-consistent timeline. Yeah, it's
within.
Cool.
And about three levels of mystery at every given moment. So you're always like, once you figure out, oh, I think that must be Locke that's doing that. But then there's another layer on top that you're like, but who's doing that? And who's the gray man? And what about the black
thing? Hey, I'm not
thing?
That far yet.
Yeah.
I'm not that far yet.
No, well, that's not a spoiler. That's just a thing.
Okay.
Right? And it's great.
Yeah, I'm glad we're reading this. I think it's a nice change of pace. And I think it's a lot of fun. And I like the character so far. And some people were complaining about the cursing. It doesn't bother me. I actually think it fits with this world. So I'm okay with it so far. It's not taking me out of the story.
I understand why some people just don't like cursing. And that's fine. I respect that. And some people don't like cursing in fantasy books. We've talked about that before with other fantasy books. And that's a style choice. It doesn't take me out of the story either. What was interesting is a lot of people were really bugged with the quotes from real literature, like Shakespeare, at the beginning of the parts, which I didn't even notice until somebody brought it up, because I just thought, oh, well, now we're kind of jumping back out of the fantasy world and saying, this is what this part is like. And I kind of dug that. But then after I read the thread the next time it happened in the book, I was like, well, that is kind of weird, actually, because that's not in this world. But
I think it's kind of creative, kind of different. So
yeah, I think
okay
overall,
right
I still like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I'm not too far in yet, but what I have read so far, I'm really enjoying. So
I'm
hope
a third to, the way. About how far are you?
I'm around, I think like 20%. I'm pretty early.
I'm about 33%.
Oh,
so
okay. So the things are really getting rolling with the Duke right now.
The Duke or the?
Sorry,
Don.
Hey, it's kind of like Duke version, right?
The Duke runs the city.
Okay, no, you're right. The Don and the Donya.
Yeah, the Don Silvara, yeah.
Yes, okay, sorry.
I like Bug. Mm-hmm. I like the Jean. I like all the Gentleman Bastards. The whole thing's great.
Yes, absolutely. So if you want to pick it up, we have it in the store, and or you can pick it up from your local library and read along. We're not too far in, so you still have plenty of time to catch up. And some people are already done, and I don't know how they do that. They're awesome.
You are a better reader than we are.
Yes, absolutely. We didn't pick a finish by date last time. So
no,
we should probably talk about that.
I think March 20th.
March 20th? March, that's a Tuesday, first of all.
March 19th, sorry.
I don't think I can be done by then.
Well, March 26th then?
That's the next Vaginal Fantasy.
That's a podcast for any of you who don't know.
That's another podcast I do. about science it's a very fiction good and podcast. Fantasy. If you want to talk about strong female leads, that is definitely a show you should check out.
Absolutely.
Because that's all we talk about. All right. Yeah, so we started it 2 weeks ago, so I guess it would be fair to say the 19th. I'm just going to have to crank out some reading.
I know. Me too. I'm going to have to buckle down to meet the 19th.
All right. We'll try for the 19th.
We're going to give it a college try.
Give it the old college try. All right. I've saved it on the website, so that means it's official.
Oh, crap.
It's exactly a month, too, because we started on the 20th.
Yeah, that's about
February,
right.
February, so.
Yeah, okay.
All right. We're in it now.
There's other reasons, too.
Yes, there are.
Let's read email.
Okay. So this one comes to us from Chris. He says, hi, this is Chris from Poland, again from the No, I Fixed It debacle. Do you remember that? No, I fixed it. I did.
Yes, I do remember.
He says, I'm now all caught up with the podcast. I just graduated from English studies at the University of Warsaw. I thought I'd send you guys my master's thesis as it deals with the cyberpunk fiction of William Gibson and Neal Stephenson, the novels Neuromancer, Snow Crash, and The Diamond Age. The thesis explores the themes of innocence and individualism in American fiction and cyberpunk in particular. Check it out if you're ever bored enough to start reading an academic paper. Cheers, Chris.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sending it to us, Chris. I can't wait to read it. And also, I don't mean to ask too much of you, but can you explain why Stanislaw Lem is so much better than I have made Veronica believe?
Oh, that would definitely take a whole thesis. You're basically asking him to write another thesis.
Can you write another thesis?
All right. Well, yeah, I started reading it, Chris, and it sounds great. And what a fantastic idea. I wish that I had thought of something cool like that when I was in school.
Well done.
But anyway, let's say hello to some new members.
Wow, do we have a lot.
We have a lot because we missed an episode last week. Sorry about that. But hello to Irene.
Paul.
Princess Nenji.
Jessica Starr.
David.
Tasha.
Johnny.
Ray.
Juka.
Penny.
Nick.
Jill.
Joey.
Rob.
Justin.
Johnny.
Laura.
Vicky.
Joel.
Kyle.
Steve.
Dan.
Benjamin.
Chad.
Stuart.
Paige.
Jordy.
Michael.
Christine.
RK.
Adam.
Sergio.
Jim.
Tim.
Virgil.
Timmy.
Cylinthar.
Richard.
Steve.
Teresa.
Gloria.
Carabeth.
Jamie.
Mike.
Paul.
Jim.
Josh.
Joe.
John.
Joey.
Zev 871.
Sylvan.
Jason.
Shinundi, or just Nundi.
Ska.
Steve.
Brent.
Theodore.
Matt.
Adrian.
Christopher.
Charlotte.
Jared.
John.
Cam.
Penny.
Kian.
Dexter.
Aaron.
Julia.
And Adam.
Wow. Welcome, everybody.
That's a lot of people. Hello.
I love about this is, we're just reading the names, and it's great to have folks, but they're all sharing a little bit about themselves and mm-hmm. why they're here in their posts. They're not just like, hey, I'm Sergio, I'm here. You know, like, it's really cool to read all the perspectives and the different ways people found the podcast and why they like it and why they like science fiction and fantasy. So thanks, everybody, for taking the time to post. Really appreciate that.
But I just have to say, you know, there are almost 5,000 members in the Goodreads, and only 1,000 of you, or 1,120 of you have posted in the new member thread.
It's 20% roughly. So
I'm just saying, we're missing a few of you guys.
You know, there's almost more people in our Goodreads forum than in my hometown.
Let's so we got Adam. We're all caught up. Okay. No one new has written since we started adding the names into the document.
Since a half hour ago.
Since a half an hour ago. So we're all clear.
What's going on? What's going wrong?
Anyway.
Our churn is falling.
Yes. I think that is our episode. By the way, a lot of you responded to our thread on the blog and also in Goodreads. We were looking for a production assistant. We think we have found one. So thank you to everyone who has written in. A lot of you wrote in, and a lot of you sounded so passionate, and it was so awesome to read all your emails. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get back to every single one of you. But we, you know, if you want to help in other ways, we can only afford, unfortunately, to hire one person. But if you have any ideas of how to help spread the word about Sword and Laser, or if you just want to, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of ways other people can help, because it seems like so many people are like really excited and passionate about helping us grow.
Maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was actually shocked with the number of people who enthusiastically wanted to help. And
it was very humbling. Yeah.
Kind of overwhelmed. And I feel bad now. It's like, I want to hire all of you. And we can't. And so now I feel like crap. Like, we asked you to do this and then you got all excited. And then we're not going to be able, most of you are, you know, because we only got one position. So we're going to try to figure out some other way we can get people involved even more so who want to be. Mm-hmm. Without like exploiting you or taking advantage. But yeah, I mean, it's inspired us to start thinking about new things to do with the show for sure. So thank you very much.
Yes, we are brainstorming for sure. And we've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about in the future.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that is an episode. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is if you want to touch our hearts.
If you want to touch us right here.
If you want to touch us, I'm pointing to my heart. I swear it's not inappropriate. It's just my heart.
Just my toe.
Feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. You can find us by touching the discussion tab on the website or going to Goodreads and searching for Sword and Laser. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, we have a phone number, and that phone number is 415-779-6735. We will see you guys next time.
If only we had a dragon friend.
I'm not even drunk and I'm still messing up this much. I love dragons.